We're spending more time outdoors and will be for the next couple of months. Once we get past the day's heat, then we have the mosquitoes to contend with. They are a nuisance, but they can also be dangerous. The latest concerns for us are the mosquito-borne Zika and West Nile viruses. Mosquitoes are also responsible for viruses that have plagued other parts of the world: malaria, yellow fever, dengue fever. Zika's a scary one, especially for pregnant women. Researchers at St. Louis University are working on an anti-Zika vaccine. And joining me in studio is Dr. Sarah George, an expert and researcher at St. Louis University Center for Vaccine Development. Doctor, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Do we really have to worry about these exotic, seemingly exotic diseases, Zika, West Nile?
Well, we should be concerned about them. Of course, there's been West Nile transmission in the United States since 1999, and in Missouri there are about 50 cases of West Nile a year reported to the Department of Health. Zika has now been reported in every state in the union. Now, those are cases in returning travelers. Zika transmission by mosquitoes has not occurred that we know of in the St. Louis area, though the mosquito that can transmit Zika is present here. There have been cases of Zika sexual transmission in St. Louis. Zika can be transmitted sexually, unlike West Nile.
The main concern that we've heard, maybe not the main concern, but a concern, is for pregnant women and the malformation of the fetus.
That's definitely a very real concern. The Centers for Disease Control just reported a few weeks ago that if a woman is infected with Zika early in the pregnancy, the first 3 months, she has about an 8% risk of having Zika malformations in the baby, which can include brain damage and many other things. Later in the pregnancy, the risk gets lower, down to 5%, but it doesn't become zero.
Are we looking for a big jump in the mosquito population due to the warm winter and wet spring?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me.
Uh-huh. Well, what are we doing about it?
Well, we at St. Louis University are doing a National Institutes of Health-sponsored study of a candidate Zika vaccine. This is a Zika vaccine that was developed by Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. It's being studied at SLU as well as at three other sites, including Walter Reed, Harvard, and in Puerto Rico. This is a whole virus inactivated Zika vaccine. You cannot get Zika from the vaccine. It's been inactivated. It's given in two doses, about 1 month apart. And we are looking for 60 more healthy adults ages 18 to 49 who might be interested in volunteering for this trial.
We'll put information on how folks can contact you on our website. But what exactly would these volunteers be subjected to?
Well, of course, volunteers are we go through all the information and we make sure they consent to everything. If they agree, basically they either would get the Zika vaccine or a placebo, just a saltwater injection. That's just to make sure that we're double-blinded, which is very important in trials. And then they get periodic blood draws to measure their immune response to the Zika vaccine.
Don't you have to infect them first to find out if the vaccine works?
No, we don't infect people with Zika or any other virus. What we do is we just draw some blood at baseline to make sure that they don't have any antibodies to Zika and have never been infected with Zika.
That strikes me, being the layman, obviously, in the room, as being an unusual way to do it. I would think that that's really the only way would be to test it on someone who has the virus.
Well, there are certain major health and ethical concerns about giving anyone a virus. So, of course, we're not going to do that. The way you do vaccine development is you start in healthy adults. You make sure that your vaccine is safe and induces an immune response, and that's what we're looking for. Then what ultimately is going to happen is this vaccine will be tested starting later this year in countries where there's a Zika outbreak, Mexico and those kinds of countries, where they're going to be testing it in people at risk for Zika.
That would be a tremendous breakthrough, wouldn't it, if a vaccine were developed?
Definitely.
How serious is it in other parts of the world in terms of numbers? I mean, we've been hearing dribs and drabs of information for the last several months about Zika. Some places it's a lot more prevalent than others.
Definitely. Of course, there was very severe outbreak in Brazil where it was first identified in the Americas. I mean, right now, millions of people have been infected. Sadly, thousands of babies have been born with damage. And, you know, the virus, like all viruses, moves around. So they're expecting the outbreak perhaps in Mexico or Central America to be more severe this year, but we just don't know yet.
Would we be looking for the potential for more cases here because this is a vacation travel season?
Well, we certainly look for more people who travel to Zika transmission areas, which is, you know, all over the Caribbean and Central and South America, to bring it back to St. Louis. We've already seen that. We will very possibly get more cases of sexual transmission here. Once a woman has Zika, she's infectious with it sexually for several weeks, and a man can actually be infectious for several months.
What sort of treatment is there for Zika if someone comes back from Brazil?
There are no treatments at this time.
None whatsoever?
None whatsoever.
How are you coordinating what you're learning with those other sites, Walter Reed and I've forgotten what the other one was you said, Johns Hopkins or?
Beth Israel and Harvard.
Okay.
Well, we all have teleconferences about every couple of weeks, and all the information, safety, antibody response, immunity, is being fed into the same database. So all the information is being coordinated and kept track of on a daily basis.
And where are we now in this research project in terms of progress?
Well, right now we at SLU have enrolled 30 healthy adults. Mm-hmm. They've all been fine, and we're looking for 60 more healthy adults who may be interested in participating.
But when would you hope to have something that has been proven to be effective?
Well, right now, the National Institutes of Health and the FDA are hoping to have a Zika vaccine available for general use maybe around the year 2020 or something like that.
Boy, it does take a long time for these things to – I mean, I understand the complexity of all of it, but once you've gotten something, the FDA takes a good long time to verify your findings, I guess.
Well, the FDA does have to review all the data, but for public health emergencies like this or public health urgencies, the FDA has an accelerated protocol. So they can move faster when it's a matter of public health.
Are you doing any work looking for vaccines for West Nile?
We are not currently doing that, but there are some investigators I know of at Washington University who are working on something for West Nile, which they may hope to bring forward. There are multiple companies that have looked at West Nile vaccines, so we're not doing anything like that here currently at SLU, but there are multiple people looking at that.
We've talked about what Zika can do. What are the complications with West Nile virus?
Well, West Nile, in many ways, even though it's related to Zika, is very different. Zika, of course, attacks developing neurons in babies that are still inside their mothers. West Nile actually preys on older adults, people age 60 and older, and those people can get severe West Nile, things like meningitis and encephalitis. They can be hospitalized. They can sadly sometimes die of it or end up with some significant impairments after the infection.
When I ran through a list of various diseases that can come from the mosquito, I neglected to mention St. Louis encephalitis. Tell me a little bit about that. It's not a good thing to have a disease named after where you live.
Well, no. St. Louis encephalitis is another virus that is transmitted by mosquitoes. You actually can pick it up anywhere in the United States. Fortunately, it's quite rare. I think the first cases were originally described in the St. Louis area, and that's how it got its name. But you can actually get it anywhere in the United States pretty much.
What are the symptoms of St. Louis encephalitis?
Well, like West Nile, you can get meningitis and encephalitis. Encephalitis means fever and abnormal brain function. People don't think straight. They frequently have to be hospitalized, and over time you hope their immune system mounts a response to the virus and clears it out.
Yeah. I just lost my train of thought there for a minute with regard to the question that I wanted to ask. In any case, let's move on. What sort of a team do you have working on all of this?
We have a very large team. We have doctors, we have nurses, we have all nurse coordinators, we have all kinds of experts. We have lab personnel who process the samples. We have researchers who are doing basic science research on Zika, like, you know, can we develop a vaccine faster by testing it in mice first? And what kind of things does it do in cell culture and in animal models and things like that?
The question that I lost there for a moment had to do with some of the research that we've been reading about, and I'm sure you're not even close to this, but maybe you know something about it, that they're working with the mosquitoes themselves and actually changing the DNA of certain mosquitoes so they can't transmit some of these diseases?
That's investigational work. I'm not working on it personally, but I am aware of those studies. There's actually multiple different ways they're trying to make mosquitoes less of a health problem. I mean, they can try and render the males infertile so that the eggs don't develop. They are trying to, as you say, interfere with the DNA of some mosquito species so that the mosquitoes are less permissive for all these viruses and malaria and so on. There's even a microbe that they're trying to use to infect mosquitoes with that reduces these viruses in the mosquitoes. So there's a lot of work going on that.
How in the world do you work with something that small and change DNA or change other attributes or qualities?
Well, you do it very carefully, and you use a microscope, and you know, they have obviously a very closed, contained system because you don't want to release those mosquitoes into the wild.
Yeah. How many varieties of mosquitoes do we have around here?
Well, I don't know enough about that to say. So I'm going to have to say I don't know on that. I'm sure there are multiple different varieties.
Right. You know, one of the things that people have questioned for a long time is really how to protect yourself from mosquitoes. You can wear long sleeves. You can get DEET or OFF or any of the rest of that. Do you have any advice for people who can assure that they're not going to be bitten by one of those things?
Well, it's hard, and it's going to get harder in the months ahead. I mean, long sleeves and long pants and all those things are great, but who wants to wear those in a St. Louis summer?
Right.
So there are lists of effective mosquito repellents on both the Centers for Disease Control website and the EPA website. DEET is one of them. Picaridin is another. There's actually quite a number of different mosquito repellents that will work, and some of them smell a little bit better than the DEET products.
And time of day to be more cautious than others?
Well, mosquitoes, you know, they're not too particular. They attack more in the evening than during the bright sunshine, but they can come out at any time.
I've heard that our breath is a pretty good antidote for mosquitoes. They don't like our breath and that they'll stay away from that.
Our breath?
Yeah.
Actually, in some ways, our breath attracts mosquitoes because it's the carbon dioxide we breathe out that helps them come in and hone in on us. So if you're standing still, breathing out, as you have to, carbon dioxide, the mosquitoes will find you. If you keep moving, your carbon dioxide gets dispersed a bit, and the mosquitoes are maybe a little less likely to find you.
Do they types of mosquitoes perhaps learn how to kind of morph in the sense that, you know, bacteria learn over a period of time to dispel antibiotics, for instance? Do mosquitoes do that with any of the products they would use to keep them from us?
Not to my knowledge, but I don't actually study mosquitoes,
I'll just say
I haven't heard that.
I said when we're talking about viruses, mosquitoes have to come into the equation. Have you heard of quake care? Does that mean a quake care? We just got information on this today, and I thought you might know something about it. Lighthouse for the Blind owns a company called Quake Care, and they're makers of emergency survival kits, and they're putting out kits now.
Oh, earthquake care.
Is it earthquake care?
I'm guessing from the name. I have to.
Yeah,
I've
just seen it as Quake Care. Uh-huh. Are you aware of that?
I had not been, no.
But they put out kits with regard to various things you can put on your clothes and what have you to keep those mosquitoes away. We have some people who are contacting us now by email. One of the questions is, what about mosquito house spraying services? Good idea?
Well, that could be. Again, I would contact the individual service and make sure that they're using something that is recommended by the CDC or the EPA that is actually effective against mosquitoes. And again, you can look those up yourself on the CDC or EPA websites.
We have an email from Lydia who writes, why are there not high rates of microcephaly anywhere other than Brazil? Zika rates are high in other South American countries, but they don't have the high rates of microcephaly. Why the focus on Zika when there must be other factors at work?
There probably are other factors at work, and Brazilian scientists are definitely working on that. However, microcephaly with Zika is not exclusive to Brazil. It's been reported in Puerto Rico, the United States, and multiple other countries. The CDC data about an 8% risk in the first 3 months of pregnancy was actually from travelers returning to the United States and United States territories, Puerto Rico, Marshall Islands, things like that. So, yes, there are other factors involved. It's an area of active research, but it's not just Brazil.
You had mentioned earlier on that we keep a close eye on people who are coming back from some of these places where Zika is more prevalent. How do we keep an eye on them? I mean, you know, there are thousands and thousands every day, I'm sure, that are coming back and forth.
Well, we don't actually actively monitor them. It's up to those people if they have any symptoms of acute Zika infection, which are rash and red eyes and fever and, you know, maybe some headache and joint pain, to self-report. And then if they come into their primary care provider, hopefully the primary care provider would think, this could be Zika, and get a sample and send it to the state for testing.
Do you think in general that the primary care providers or the family doctors here and elsewhere are pretty much up to speed on what to look for that?
Well, I certainly think they've heard about it, and everyone tries to stay aware. You know, there's continuing medical education, and again, there's a lot of information available publicly to anybody on the CDC website. And the Missouri Department of Health website, too.
What should people do aside from going to their doctor? I mean, how long should they wait before going to see that family care physician if they see some of these symptoms?
Well, if they do see some of these symptoms and they've just come back from a Zika transmission area, you'd want to see your doctor sooner rather than later to get tested. Now, there is no treatment, but the testing would at least tell you whether or not you had the infection.
How long does this run? With no treatment, how long does it take for this to run its course?
In healthy adults, it's only a few days. Yeah. 3 to 5 days of, again, fever, rash, red eyes, maybe some headache and joint ache.
So unless you're pregnant, it's maybe not that big a deal?
Exactly. Unless you're pregnant, it's really not that big of a deal. I mean, you obviously don't want to get it. You don't want to get any of these infections, but the real concern, again, is pregnancy, those developing babies with their developing neurons. If they get infected with Zika, they can sadly get some substantial damage.
Sure. Who is paying for the research that you're doing and the others are doing?
It is paid for predominantly by the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, as part of their public health campaign. Some of it is also the Army, Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, that actually made the vaccine.
Does the military do a lot of medical research?
The military does an enormous amount of medical research. They need to support and protect our troops. So they do work on Zika vaccines, dengue vaccines, HIV vaccines, Ebola vaccines. They do a lot of work.
And most of that done at Walter Reed?
A lot of it, but again, much of it is done in countries where our military personnel might be deployed. Some of it is done in other countries where, you know, you have a lot of, for example, HIV transmission. If you're trying to develop an HIV vaccine, that's where you would test it.
Sure. Well, that's a subject for a different program. I think we get into that. Your event is going to be taking place, as you indicated, on Wednesday, July 12th. That's it's called Zika Fact, Fiction, and Tips for Prevention. That's from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Center for Global Leadership on Little. Is that right? What is this? Who is invited to attend this, and what exactly is the kind of information you expect to impart?
Well, anyone who is invited to attend who wants to come, it's free and open to the public. Anybody can attend who wishes, who has questions, who wants to learn more about the topic. There'll be about four or five panelists there. I'll be one of them. We'll be giving a little bit of information on Zika, but really we're there to answer questions for anyone has about anything, travel, anything.
Do you have any sense, again, this subject comes up a lot in our various conversations in this room, have any sense that there's kind of a new budget-cutting mood in Washington these days, that this is going to have an impact on the kind of work you're doing and other projects?
Well, yes, it would. If President Trump's proposal to slash the National Institute of Health funding goes through, this will very negatively impact Zika vaccine development, HIV vaccine development, Ebola vaccine development, West Nile, you name it. It's going to, if that happens, there'll be a lot of very negative effects.
Are you going to recommend that people contact their congresspeople?
I would certainly recommend it if they choose to, and I will say I've already done so.
All righty, well, good for you. Final thought you'd like to leave us with? Our time is just about up.
Again, we're doing a Zika vaccine at St. Louis University. We're looking for 60 more healthy adults, ages 18 to 49. If you have any interest, please call the Vaccine Center at 314-977-6333 or email us at vaccine@slu.edu.
We'll put all of that on our website. I'm sure people driving right now don't have a pencil at hand, but we'll get it on our site. Thank you so much, Doctor. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.